your recollections of those first years. Let me tell you some things that happen to young people when they come to it. I was a little older than most of the students. When I came to school, Matthew's aura still was very, very heavy in the school. I remember one of the things that both the students and the faculty used to talk about was the way in which during the war, when Matthew was in architecture school, in order to avoid the Germans who had prohibited architectural studies for the Poles, that the Polish students used to build their models small enough to carry in their hands so that they could destroy them if they were stopped on the street. Now, this may be an apocryphal story too, but this is one of the things that went around. What was the character of Polish architectural education that Matthew underwent? I'm trying to find out why it was that Matthew made that incredible kind of statement of his initially in the school, and that gave rise to the livestock pavilion and all of the things that he did there.
Well, at that time, I think that when we were in school, it was, the architecture was quite different than here. It was much more, really, much more of it. For instance, you went through the structure course. You did your own counting on complicated structures and things like that. So, of course, in other words, one had the feeling that we can do anything except, or everything except, of course, much slower than men who can. Who does it all the time that will do it. But one has that feeling then structure was very comfortable to view with. And more really than counting the thing was, the main thing was then basic of a structure. Statics was the most important thing. So once you felt, and that's why it probably explains then it's a great ease to handling, to, let's say, working with what's his name? The man who counted, the engineer who did the Raleigh Arena.
Yannick?
No.
Oh, Severet,
just because of that, he was in a way, I remember, quite amazed on the ease with which Matthew was working with him over the drafting board, but that was explicable. But just because we just very strong education on our school was very strong on that, so that was understanding of principles and what it does. It was just as I said, you are well prepared to do practically anything, except of course when you come to the, if you came to the actually doing that, you'll be much slower than somebody who does it every day. But this is not was not predominant really trace. It was just. Just as much as, let's say, drawing a lot and having facility to draw any form you think of. So that's, again, gave the, in a way, freedom to operate with the forms, to work with the forms which you can really express yourself. But perhaps the most important thing was then it's ours times were time in a transition from old system bazaar to the new, but it was done so naturally. It was no real break, and as with, we still had the courses in the history and would really understand the principles of a bazaar really training, and yet real design was as much avant-garde as could be. It was not such a natural transition. It was not different, as we don't felt very comfortable looking at the old building, and they were exactly the same thing, the new building. It was no difference, except the technology was different, the possibilities were different. Corbusier was doing things really it was not, to us, it was not not really complete break. It was just using the new possibilities in what technology offered. So this understanding of a structure and knowledge of the architecture form and from the past and its structure will really make it very easy to work with both. For instance, there was never any difference. You can use example from any age with the great disease because it was the same principle involved. So what you say, going back to principle, in a way for us it was, because the same principle was in one or another.
Was there much knowledge of the Bauhaus movement in Poland
no,
at that time?
No. Corbusier was much more influential.
Mm-hmm.
No, not nearly to the degree which, let's say, I found it here.
Mm-hmm.
No, we didn't have any really need or nobody was trying to bring, let's say, abstract design to that. It was, discussion was always on a sort of abstract level because you had to compare very new forms with very old forms, so that was the same thing when discussed. This building was symmetrical and that was very quite appropriate to have symmetry, so it was very, very abstract discussion, but you didn't have to go to the abstract forms to do it. They were just as real, and that's, for instance, when I was confronted with the teaching of basic design in a role. I was horrified. I just couldn't figure out what all these squares are doing, chasing each other. But finally, when I remember, my sister will stop crying. It's just simply, it's not a question of positive and negative space. It's a wall and a hole in a wall. And that was very simple from that moment, in other words. And strangely enough, it's one of our professors during the war, what he is doing, he really was teaching basic design, just to cover, then it was architecture. And as it was, he discussed all the stories and principles and concept of the design on examples, which like, let's say, teacup instead of the building. But to him, it was building. So that's why we had that kind of, it was never conscious fight. It was our professor were just as much trying the new thing as we were doing, so it was very, very pleasant. There, I think it was certain security, then you don't have to fight. It was all this heritage of what was before to reach for advice, so to speak, instead of fighting then, because we don't have to. It was accepted, and let's make it new, let's try the new possibilities.
When Matthew was sent to this country by the Polish government to work on the UN building, had he had any concept of wanting to teach or getting involved in teaching?
No, I don't think so. No.
And what was it that got him interested in coming down to Raleigh? It certainly wasn't at that time and may not still be the most cosmopolitan city in the world, and for a great cosmopolitan Pole.
Well, it's purely, I hate to say access, but in a way, yes. It was just at that moment he was looking for any job, and I think Louis Mumford, Henry was talking to Mumford and looking for somebody. Mumford suggested he knows somebody who may do the job, so it's a really purely. That's usually in a life, the things are coming. Strangely accidental, the most major decisions.
Yeah, they are somewhat accidental, usually.
Sure.
When Matthew came down to state, it was obviously a new school, getting started on the foundations of a program that had been very weak for a long time. Who among the new faculty did Matthew relate to most closely that you can recall? As I remember, Jim Fitzgibbon, Duncan Stewart, I'm just trying to think of the people who had come from Oklahoma mm-hmm. with Henry. Duncan, Jim Fitzgibbon, I don't know if Cecil Elliott came
yes.
among the original group, but I think he
remember.
Did.
I think even later. I don't remember. George Matsumoto.
Oh,
I think then I wouldn't single out anybody's.
Mm-hmm.
It was a good team, everybody's working together, so I don't think there was at that moment any question of it.
How did the commission for the pavilion the livestock pavilion come about? Well, Matthew, as I understand it, at least initially, Matthew and Fitzgibbon and Matsumoto were together working on it. When?
No, I don't think so.
You don't think so? I don't recall precisely.
No, I don't remember, but I don't think so. I don't. Maybe there was some possibility of doing them, but I don't think they ever did any designing together. No.
That the design right from the start was Matthew's, and then
Dietrich's office. Yes. Mm-hmm. I can't recall because I don't remember. But mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure that they did never work on that together. I think in things like that you just cannot really split the chores. It
yes.
just comes from one pencil.
Do you remember anything about Matthew's process of developing that initial sketch design for the
well,
pavilion?
I remember holding the fingers like that just to figure out how the things were, and because it was lots of different sketches before, which was very really much heavier and not related to all the structures, finally come to the moment, and then it was I guess obvious then with the new technology one can do new things, and that's why the other things were rejected simply. And when the possibility of working with the new, really excitement was then the possibility of using new materials for the roof, which never really were developed, but at the time I know they were discussions with the DuPont and things like that. So that was, again, I think that was unquestionable. It was a very great influence of the American technology. I don't think that kind of design will come out somewhere else. I think it's clearly related to the challenge which technology, new materials, new ways presented, and therefore all the first sketches, which is much more structurally much more old-fashioned, they were just simply not satisfactory.
Did Matthew save those old sketches of the previous things? It would, just from student standpoint, it would be interesting to see a person's mind.
I really don't know. They might be some I really just don't remember. Really. There are some just the round thing, rather bulky, with the masonry wall and just cover with some. But then one moment came really just to go clearly just to the structure and the new material that was very obvious. And then it was very nice response of his friends to the design, like Eero Saarinen, and who called, I remember, late at night and said, "Don't forget the water on the roof."
Which Saarinen later forgot on Dulles.
Well, but you see, that's what was nice. Then it was venture which friends were interested in, and it was very...
It was an enormous statement because it was seemingly the first time that the principles of cable structures had been applied to buildings since Roebling started really the contemporary use of cable structures. It was an enormous kind of leap forward, and I was just interested in how the whole idea of a cable suspended system, a doubly curved...
Well, again, just very simply came, as you said, I traced into that fact that you have these two arches falling down and hold them together, and of course they have to be have certain flexibility, so of course cable was obvious. So it was really understanding of statics that more than anything else. And I said it facility working with the form and static and really, really respecting law of gravity, just sort of, it was second nature, you just never forget for a moment about that. I think it's very simple, really.
One of the things that's interesting that maybe you have some recollections about, and that's the relationship between Matthew and Eero Saarinen. During the time that Matthew was at State, he did some consulting design work for Saarinen, didn't he?
Yes.
What I'm interested in is really what effect Matthew had on Eero. Now, as you know, Eero was always one to acknowledge very deeply.
That's right, and I think that sums it up. I think Eero said himself. Then it was an influence. Mm-hmm. If you just read through his statement, and he was saying, or I don't know where it was, but I remember reading certain things which are, he really was very first one to admit that it was influence, and I think I would just leave it with his statement.
Eero's, as you know, Eero's major kind of influence was he felt through Mies, and he was the one, he was, Henry Camp Hefner tells the story of how on a Thanksgiving day, Eero sent a telegram to Mies thanking him in very kind of, in very touching tones for the influence he had. Saarinen did feel somewhat the same kind of influence from Matthew, didn't he?
Yes, but of course that was comfortable ones, because they were already working together and were the same age exactly. There were just three of them, which was, I remember Philip Johnson and Eero, and they were all sort of almost make a club of exactly the same age. So it was very personal relation, really. They just, I know Eero was always saying that he will welcome anything to have Matthew just closer together, because it was possibility for Matthew to get the work in Detroit, and all the large firms wanted him to come there and be chief designer, and Eero was extremely happy. So it was very pleasant. It was never a question of any competition. On the contrary, there was just physically closer they could be, more they would learn from each other or influence each other.
Would it be interesting to speculate on the influence one would have on the other, that Saarinen coming out of that very strict Miesian kind of discipline?
Well, I don't know if it was only that. No, I think Eero also had very great influence, was very greatly influenced by his father too. I don't think he was really strictly Miesian, no. No, the fact that he was so eager to work with the different forms in Rich One, I think that was not break, it was always with him.
The preliminary work that Matthew had been doing in Chandigarh, did you perceive a continuity between, say, I realize that the Livestock Pavilion in Raleigh is a very unique building, and to try and make a continuity between a very unique building to a much larger scale project, both in terms of concept and in terms of scale also, is a little difficult to conceive of, but in terms of at least the progression of a man as he develops his creative abilities, did you see a progression from the kinds of interest in constructional techniques and structure from the Livestock Pavilion through the sketch designs for Chandigarh?
Yes, because anywhere on all the sketches, which never really had much to do with the reality, which were for larger things like assembly and so on, there was the same thing, except of course with the recognition of the different material, and then it was freedom working with the forms, which were really large and challenging and experimental. But of course when he found himself in India, an immediate problem was to do something on a rather very small scale, but just housing really what they did. That was just as important, because I don't think there was any question of making difference between big design or small design. So I think probably he was very, I remember from the letter, and he was very pleased that people over there were saying that he was able to grasp the tradition of build a small building, especially housing, and within his design was able to, let's say, left the room for decoration or some kind of expression of it, of the owner, which he did absolutely unconsciously, and yet then people were very, very pleased with it and very surprised. I remember him writing and said, well, not accidentally, but somehow I remember the word, but he felt that it was, it came naturally to him, was just as a response to what was around. So I think that again is quite typical that one is sensitive to the environment very much, because of course in State Fair was totally different environment when that kind of a structure was very important. However, there, just to bring the comfort of today's living with understanding of necessity of the population was. And I think then this, maybe again, it's like going back to the school, or the curriculum what we had ourselves, it was not different. It was the same thing, that working on a scale of the town or a scale of the little housing.
It's interesting to look at the housing, because Matthew's sketches for the housing seem to be much more responsive to India and Indian housing than do the final designs of Le Corbusier, which are really French housing.
They didn't. I don't think it was much. Some English architects were working on a housing, mostly phrase or something. I don't remember the name. No, that was not used at all. It was just.
I wonder maybe if we could chat a little bit about your teaching and your perceptions of architectural education. This is important because it relates to what was going on in the School of Design at that time.
And in Raleigh?
In Raleigh. And the kind of things you perceived as being positive in terms of generating some, I think I can say with some degree of dispassion, some really exciting times.
That's for sure. And that's probably the most recollection I have. It's a question of the total commitment and extremely exciting times. Of course, in a small place like that, teaching becomes even more involving than in a big city, because you are all time, practically every 24 hours. And I think then, with all discussion and our disagreements and it was always very, it was feeling that it's something very important going on. That's what this discussion and disagreements were very, very true, very, very important, because you really felt that it's, maybe just because we are all young at the time and really believed in principle very strongly, but it was some kind of the honesty of search, I mean, of commitment, which was very refreshing, and that's probably the most pleasant thing I remember. Mm-hmm.
It seemed to me in 52, when I came back to State, that the, at least beginning design years, were very Bauhaus-oriented, were very abstract, dealt with the understanding of abstract principles.
Well, probably they look like, because even if I look at the work which I'm doing right now, it looks like that, but it isn't. I think that was the main thing, that was not that. As I said before, positive and negative space was wall and a hole in the wall. To me, it always was. And to me, if you ask my way of teaching or trying to get across to students, it's only a symbol which they are doing. But the symbol itself, it doesn't mean anything except unless you understand what he's representing, what stands for. In other words, for putting some, I think the value of abstract thing then it just students has a is free right away and with great ease, greater ease, does something new. In other words, creative process becomes very naturally. If you're doing something which, let's say, fireplace or something which is familiar, then right away they'll be influenced with their memories or their previous experience could be quite limited. And this way, I think this is the biggest advantage of working at the first level of creative work is in abstract, is then it just does not bring the influence of the rather limited, probably, experiences before. And once they learn that they can do it, then it's much easier later. To me, that's the advantage. But on the other hand, I couldn't possibly myself work with just, as I said, black squares on a white paper chasing each other. To me, it's a building right away. And if, today I go to the class and I will take some, I have a beautiful portfolio here of photographs of the Versailles. And then I think I can explain a rhythm. After they did something, and then I tried to explain the principle, and they do, and then I related to the. You cannot understand it really unless you learn from existing example. Then you do it abstractly, and then let's say in discussion of existing examples, you use the abstract concepts because that's the only thing could be accurate. Otherwise, if you try to describe very realistically what you have seen or remember, your picture is different than my picture of the same thing. But if you make a abstract statement, then this building is symmetrical. Therefore, we know what symmetry means. It doesn't make any difference what you saw or I saw. It means the same thing, then it was rather formal and rigid. So you see, that's what I think, for instance, to a great extent, it is, I had some kind of apprehension working really abstractly sometimes, and Kepesh just, I remember, told me that once, then it's an accurate way you can discuss things if you use abstract symbols, because your pictures are different. Unless you really done it there in exactly the same moment and you pointed to this and this and that. But that's, for instance, I don't consider my own work related to the Bauhaus very much at all. No.
Where do you feel that the influences for your work have come?
As I say, from my training, for just being concerned with the building and the space and from the reality. In other words, I'm impatient. I just cannot get too excited what two lines in space will do. But once they become a real object to me, then it's the same way I don't feel the I'm comfortable with the examples through all the ages, the same feel. The history, and that's what it helped me the same way the abstract things they help for me to express, but or rather existing example, it's the most more important than anything, because I couldn't possibly try to teach just being concerned only with the abstract. I think it just comes. I don't think it's, of course I use the examples of the architecture more probably just because it's more familiar to me, but I think the potter can use his pots. As I said, during the war, some of our greatest professor always brought the teacup to the class and discussed what is proportion, what is the scale, what's the material, what is structure into that, just using that. But he clearly translated that he was teacup in the front of him, but he was talking about building and pointing things to the building. And if you take something abstract, right away said, go and look at the building and see, am I right? I don't think I can explain concept unless I use the existing examples.
Let me get back to those early years in Raleigh. There were some really rather unique things happening. At least from what I know now, I was supposed to have lunch with Bucky today. I've known Bucky now since the days at North Carolina State when I was there. But he's had something come up, and so we've postponed it for a month. But at that time, Bucky certainly didn't have an extraordinarily profound reputation in the United States. He'd done the Dymaxion House. It's odd that I should be in Kansas now because, as you know, the Dymaxion House was built in Wichita, Kansas, and is still being lived in down in Wichita. And I have never seen it. I'm going to go down and see it one of these days. I know that when Bucky would come through, my recollections are that Bucky had this Airstream trailer that he had all of these models in, and he would come through with a kind of a show-and-tell program in which he dragged out all the models and talked about the things he was doing. I know that those visits of Bucky excited the students. I also know that a couple of the faculty got very deeply involved. Obviously, Duncan Stewart got involved, and
Fitzgibbon,
involved, and eventually Fitz opened the Synergetics office in Raleigh, and Duncan did that, I think, very profound study of spatial geometry, the thing he called the orderly subdivision of spheres. Did the other faculty become as involved with Bucky as, say, Duncan and Fitz did?
No.
Was Matthew particularly interested in the sorts of things that Bucky was doing?
Not to the degree, let's say, Duncan was. Because, of course, Duncan, because it's a question of the personality. It just on temperament, it was too confining. But of course, he was very much interested what again, the possibilities which that offer, but not to the degree to just go and study geometry. Because Duncan himself said that his study is absolutely complete and finished, and he will tell a student after lecture, don't try to do it because it's all done.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the answer of his personal reaction to just go in and pick up something and do it. And I think it was just respect for accomplishment and always unquestionable and contribution of what mind can do. It brings some new thing, it just them, and then you're just everybody's searching, everybody doing somebody's something new.
Do you remember any of the particular people who came through as visitors during those first years that made any particular impact on the kinds of things that you were interested in or that Matthew was interested in?
And Raleigh.
Specifically, I would be interested in trying to find whether or not there was any, I know there was no formal connection, but I would like to see what kind of informal connections there were between Black Mountain and Raleigh. Were you and Matthew at all aware of the Black Mountain experiment or the school up there at Black Mountain?
Well, I've just heard about it, but I knew the Albers were there.
The Albers were there, yeah.
But really, it's again, it was maybe through the Albers, what he was doing, it was considered just a contribution, which was his contribution. It was not enough to pick up from there and do your own, because he devoted his life to one specific search, and he did it superbly. So it was just recognition of these people, yes, and respect and respect for the quality of the achievement and quality of work. But I don't think that was in the temperament of Manu at all, just narrowing the field. I think it was probably opposite. It was just responded to the challenge of something much larger scale and much less defined, much less constricted.
I don't think anybody had any illusions at North Carolina State that Raleigh was going to be able to keep Matthew for a long time. I think that it was fairly obvious, especially at that time in which a whole variety of very exciting young architects were coming on the scheme, that Matthew and you would eventually go somewhere else.
I don't know. I don't think it was that. That was not the thing which was preoccupied. I don't think I ever had a feeling it was stepping stone.
Mm-hmm. Oh, no, not in that sense, no. But what I'm interested in is whether Matthew had perceived any kind of thing that was fairly long range in terms of his interests, rather than just the immediacy of the very deep interests he had.
Well, of course, when he was in Raleigh, he was going to New York all the time, once a month, and working there with the Harrison on the UN. So I don't think that was important. I'm sure that before, last months, of course, it was clear that he probably wouldn't stay there. There was some other challenging things, like one also this offer from outfit in Detroit, and so what gives more opportunity to design, to work, to practice, really. But it was somehow. Now, while he was in Raleigh, it was a very real place, and it was no. Probably one feels that one can live everywhere and work everywhere. I never felt that in Raleigh was sort of a limiting thing. Except, of course, one was so used to being pushed around by the by the things which are not one cannot control. So, but it was not the issue, which one think. No, it was so much going on there. It was very good. I think it was extremely good place to be there. And I always tell students here, don't stay around Philadelphia. Go somewhere, because that's where it's simply easier. I think it was a very lucky opportunity to be there and just make it possible.
Let me put you on the spot a little bit. May I call you Sasha?
Of course, please.
Charles, please.
Okay. Naturally.
Let me put you on the spot a little bit, Sasha. You know, the thing that's gotten me involved in the thing I'm doing now is my real dissatisfaction with the last 15 years of architectural education. It's just that I find us going in sort of dead ends, in circles and in dead ends. What are your perceptions of, you know, the last 15 years, in view of the kinds of things that were happening, say, in the early 50s and in the mid-50s? What are your perceptions of, say, this last two decades in architectural education?
Oh, I'm concerned, too. I don't know how to formulate, because on one hand, I think that acceptance of the different attitudes of different architects is very, and expose students to that, it's very good. But as I said before, I never felt that I was preaching, let's say, something specific, no. So I don't feel I was ever narrow-minded, and or as education, which we're concerned with, I never felt limited by some specific trend which has to be. But on the other hand, a lack of quality, or rather willingness to accept a lack of quality in student work, disturbs me tremendously. And sometimes you just look at the things which, oh, now it's absolute junk, and you just pretend and you take it seriously, and it's just. I don't think it's right, but that's maybe less even important. More important probably is, at least to me, and that probably is quite related to what you started with, then it's a, maybe it's through common sense or something like that, the certain respect of the existing laws, like I'd say, going back to law of gravity. I cannot really be comfortable with handling the structure as a element of the decorative element, which absolutely doesn't use it, as with using the arch, which does nothing, and use it such a way so doesn't do any job, where it would have done beautiful job. It just bothers me. That's something which I even tell students, and I say, think that I am corrupting the young, but I simply say that that necessity of the order of clarity of thinking accepted what is available. To me, the structure is available. Just it just gives you reason of doing something. And that sort of this playfulness just, sure, I don't mind, for instance, take a brush and paint something on the building and make it clearly say that I'm decorating that. All right, you can glue anything, you can paint it. Nothing wrong with that. We go back and forth from less ornament to more ornament. Our hemlines and the dresses go up and down. It's fine with me. But just to take something which is there, which have done job beautifully, and sits there as a decoration, then you go to all tricks to support, let's say, something, that it just disturbs terribly. It just waste of the existing opportunities, and it's also lack of elegance, I simply say. It's just, to me, always economy of means and ease with which you do the work. It's synonym of elegance. And if it's just absolutely just done in purpose, well, I'm not amused, let's say. Then this need of being amused, it doesn't amuse me, it just bores me. So at once you were amused and somebody stands on your head, but if everybody's trying to do that, then it's really, it's... So I'm really not amused by that at all. It just bores me.
It's interesting because...
And I'm impatient, because I mean, I don't have too many more years, I'm much more impatient than my young colleagues because I like to see next step soon because I don't have that much time. And therefore, I'm really impatient like them. I say, here it is, there is a structure, there is new technology. Do something with it, don't neglect it, sorry.
How do you think we can get back to these kinds of issues? Preoccupations. Let me put it a little more precisely. I seem to remember in reading George Qualls's introduction to the student publication on Matthew, a quote from Matthew about the importance of the column as a structural element. I also seem to remember that Lou Kahn
always said
precisely the same thing, you know, in terms of the importance of the column, the visual statement of the column. Did you find a commonality of thought pattern between, say, Lou and the kinds of things that Matthew was interested in?
Sure.
I mean, deep down, underneath all the stylistic...
No, deep down, certainly, because I think it's exactly... I remember Lou carrying some big books from the library about Roman architecture. He was not copying that. He was just looking through that just to get reinforcement. That's what I was saying in the beginning, that certain familiarity with what was in the past gives you freedom because you feel a new more. You just use that. And you see how these things were changing all the time. Just like I remember this Auguste Perret statement that we should study Greeks not to do the way they have done, but they would have done if they were in our place. And that's what's going back to the principle, to the respect of what column can do, what the wall can do. Lou will call it what brick wants to do. That's beautifully put, and that's poetic. Not everybody at that degree of a poetry to express himself like he did, but it's the same thing. That's why to him there was no misunderstanding between anybody, between Mies or Corbusier or Lewis. It's just different person. I think then accepting the principles, it just gives you gives you more freedom instead, and I think that's a basic misunderstanding. I think it's rejecting which limits us, not accepting the limitations. And I think the designing with limitation, it gives you occasion to give the character to what you are doing, and occasion to express yourself different than somebody else because situation is different. But just designing for amusement, so you said painting the wall in the polka dots, it's fine because that's it's clearly. It's but pretending that something is doing, or rather wasting opportunity, That's probably it's just the waste opportunity using the available element and structure and opportunity which structure offers a new material. That just annoys me, not even irritates, but I just don't have patience for that. I just